It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What is up? Welcome into the Fade the Chalk podcast, brought to you by the FTN Network. I am your host, D-Bro, joined at the hip, as always, with my co-host, Adam Pfeiffer. So all three arms of FadeTheNoise.com are pumping out tons of content daily, with 800-plus items of content live on the site right now. Woo! We have articles, videos, podcasts, babe, whatever your flavor is, we have got it. The FTN Prop Shop is also live and 100% free. That thing is basically a Google search engine for prop bets. So you head over there, you search any team, player, etc. across every legal sports book, click on the prop, and automatically get transported to the site. So head over to ftnbets.com/prop-shop to take that baby for a test drive right now. So on today's show, we're going to close out our positional preview series with the tight end position. And we have a special guest yet again, the Score's lead fantasy analyst, Justin Boone. So Justin, we had to get him up in here. This guy has been smashing every single season in Fantasy Pros accuracy contest. He's been top 10 in 7 of the last 8 years. You could go follow him on Twitter at Justin Boone. Justin, what is going on, man?
Man, I appreciate you guys having me on. This is exciting. I love what you guys are doing over at FTN. I tweeted out, I don't know, it was a few weeks back. It was around the time that you got hired, D-Bro, that it seems like this offseason, it's been more exciting to follow all the fantasy analysts changing spots and getting new jobs and all that stuff than it was even following like the NFL players changing teams. Because FTN, it was like every single day you guys were announcing a hire, two hires. It's fantastic to see the industry keep growing, and I love what you guys are doing. I'm super honored to be one of the first guests here on the podcast with you guys. So let's go.
We were not going to roll through this week of just having everybody on without getting you up in here. Your accuracy every single season has been astounding, man. I mean, obviously, you have your process on lockdown, so we had to get you in here to talk about tight ends. Adam, what's going on, buddy?
Yeah, first of all, I appreciate the kind words from Justin, because it was, you know, it was like a bunch of free agents from like NBA free agency, just like every other day it was somebody else signing and somebody else joining. But and some people may have found it kind of, you know, obnoxious, but I think the more, you know, stuff like that happens where the industry keeps growing, I think it's better for everybody. So yeah, appreciate Justin coming on, and I am, as always, just really happy to be able to do this podcast, you know, 3 times a week with D-Bro, who, you know, we did receivers the other day with tags, and I could have just gushed about Marvin Jones some more, but this is a good episode for you, man, because you have a couple tight ends where you just are infatuated with.
Oh, absolutely. We're going to talk about the FTN namesake, of course, but I don't want to bury the lead too much. Justin, let's kick this thing off. Strategy-wise, walking into drafts, how are you approaching the position? Because I know, personally for me, it's really, I'm either going to pay up or I'm just punting the position this year. But I'm really curious, how are you attacking the tight end position in drafts?
Overall, I don't really go into any draft with a set strategy for drafting any position. I want to stay as balanced as I can normally, try to grab value as it falls down the draft board. Generally, this year for tight ends, what's ended up happening is exactly what you said. I'm either going to grab Kittle and Kelce in the mid-second to early third if they fall that far. Otherwise, I'm probably going to wait until pretty late. Like in Scott Fishbowl, I got Gronkowski as the tight end 16, and my strategy there was just, I like so many tight ends this season that I'm just going to wait until, you know, as late as I possibly can to get somebody who I think has top 10 upside. And there's a lot of those guys this year. And, you know, it's tight end premium and Scott Fishbowl, so it's even more important to get tight ends there. But we're going to talk about a bunch of guys. I mean, if you're willing to go in the middle rounds, there's a couple guys there that I might take a shot on, but they're going to have to fall just a little bit to me just because there's so much value near the end of drafts this year. It's wild.
Yeah, I think like rounds 5 to 8 are kind of the no-go territory for me. Like I don't see myself pushing the button on a lot of tight ends, at least in that spot, just because whether it's wide receivers, other positional values that fall into that range, there's a lot of guys that I'm like, I can kind of make a case for, but I find myself gravitating to other positions. Adam, who, or at least how are you attacking drafts?
I've kind of always been either I'm going to be the first guy to take a tight end or I'm going to be the last guy. And that's especially true this year because I feel like this is the deepest it's been at the position in a long time. There's probably, I don't know, at the moment, 15, 16 guys that I would be comfortable inserting into my lineup as my starting tight end. And that could get to, you know, 20 by the middle of the season with some guys that we'll talk about later. So, yeah, the only difference is player specific because I did a mock draft last week where I went running back early and then I, you know, took a receiver or two. And then in the sixth round, I wanted to take another receiver because I went three straight running backs. And Zach Ertz was kind of sitting there at 6.2. And, like, I'm fine with Ertz. I think he's clearly the tight end four for most people. I would prefer Andrews. But where there was, we talked about those sophomore receivers last episode, and those guys were all off the board. And that's the kind of drop-off to where I kind of debate, okay, do I want one of these receivers like an A.J. Green, who we like, Jarvis Landry, one of those guys, or do I want to take, you know, Zach Ertz, who I know what I'm going to get from every year. So I took Zach Ertz. So I guess it depends, but for the most part, I'm either taking Kittle or Kelce, like Justin said, in the second or early third, if you're lucky, or I'm going to wait till, you know, round 10 or so. And not just, you don't have to just get one of those guys. You can pair those guys because there are some question marks with a lot of those guys, and you can just take a couple of them.
Or you could really take one guy late in the draft.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't work out, you don't have to be worried because there's so many. I'd go even deeper than you. You could make an argument for probably 25 tight ends this season, mm-hmm. potentially jumping up. We know that it doesn't take that much to get into the top 12 at tight end, right? You have a pretty good touchdown total, and all of a sudden you're a low tight end one in fantasy. So I would be willing to go so late just because if it doesn't work out with that guy, there's going to be guys on the waiver wire early in the season that jump up. There could be, you know, the Jay Sternbergers or the Dawson Knox.
There's going to be 15 Chicago Bears at tight end that are going to be
one of their 10. Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, there's so many names that, especially the unsexy guys that like nobody wants to draft. Like, you don't hear many people walking out of a draft just pumping their fists being like, yes, I got Jack Doyle, baby.
That's me.
Like, nobody does that. So, and he's a guy that I think, like, if you're talking about, like, you just take one with your last pick, and if he doesn't pay off, bye-bye, go back to the waiver wire with you. So, if you are kind of paying up, I know that, at least consensus-wise, there's not many people that you're going to find that have either Kelce or Kittle, one of those guys, that's basically the cemented top two across the industry. But Justin, do you think a guy like Mark Andrews can catch them or possibly surpass them this year?
I mean, anything's possible if they get hurt, if, you know, COVID takes them out for some games. But I don't see that happening for Andrews. I know there's a lot of meat on the bone there for him, right? He played less than 50% of the snaps last year. I don't think he cleared 60% of the snaps in any of their games last season. But I also expect some of the wideouts in Baltimore to come on a little bit this year. And Debro, I know we both love Miles Boykin, right? Yes, Miles Boykin could come in and start to steal a bunch of those touchdowns. He's that kind of player. You have Hollywood Brown, who is going to be healthier, who could probably emerge as their wide receiver one this year. I like Devin Duvernay in the slot. I think he's a guy that people are really overlooking. So we're also going to see some of that efficiency kind of regress for Lamar Jackson, especially in the passing touchdown department. So I don't see Andrews overtaking the two elite guys this year, no.
I think he could, but I would also say I think he would have to play at his peak while Kelce and Kittle would have to play slightly below theirs because I don't think in this run-first offense, even with a concentrated passing offense, unless, you know, Miles Boykin or someone emerges, I don't think he's getting close to those guys in terms of targets, especially Kelce. You know, he was targeted at one of the highest rates. Like, he was targeted, I think he was targeted on the highest percentage of his routes in the NFL, or definitely first among tight ends. So it's pretty obvious it's a concentrated passing offense. But, you know, if Marquise Brown's healthy, that's going to take away. He does have probably as much, if not more, touchdown equity as those guys. He led the NFL among tight ends in end zone targets last year. I think he's going to be really good, but if he plays at his peak and Kelce and Kittle are slightly below theirs, I could see it, but, I mean, Kelce is just the dude is 75 yards every single game, and he's going to probably lead. It's going to be, I would say, what, him or Zach Ertz leading the NFL in targets at the position. Maybe Kittle if they open up the offense more, but yeah, it would have to take Kelce and Kittle slightly underperforming for him to get there, in my opinion.
When you look at those elite tight ends, to actually kind of look at, like, where would they fall with receivers? 2 years ago in 2018, they both would have been top 12 fantasy wide receivers based on the points they put up. Last season, I think Kelce would have been like around wide receiver 9, and Kittle was in the top 20 at receiver. So I don't know if there's any other tight ends out there that have that kind of
and
upside,
Kittle,
right?
Kittle had, what, 3 touchdowns called back by penalty last year, too? Remember that? It was like 2 in one game. How annoying that was.
Debo Samuel, you know, potentially missing some time or maybe a little slowed early.
And Kelce is just going to be a yardage machine. We know that. He's had at least 70 receiving yards in nearly 63% of his games over the last 2 seasons. Just so safe. Now, Andrews is going to be highly involved, but those guys, like you said, they really are essentially receivers at the position.
Well, and with Kelce, it's the volume aspect. I mean, the guy's finished top 2 in targets at the position over the last 3 seasons. He's been top 6 in red zone targets in all of the NFL over that span, too. So you're looking at just from both aspects, like the money touches as well as volume aspect. It's really going to be hard to catch him outside of an injury. But with Andrews, I do think that we could see another step forward this year because I just don't know how much injuries played into some of what we saw last year. Because from weeks 11 through 15, I mean, he didn't play any more than 43% of the snaps in any of those games. And it's not just a raw snap percentage, because that wasn't really his shtick last year. Like, he wasn't playing, like Justin was talking about, 80, 90% of any game.
No, they had Hurst and Boyle.
But he ran less than 15 routes in each one of those games, too. So you saw him surpass those marks specifically in 7 of his other 10 games. So even though he didn't miss any games outside of sitting out for week 17, I still think that if injuries did play a factor into what we saw even last year for Andrews, there is still a ceiling that he hasn't realized yet. Mm-hmm. That if they do pass more, which I'm not necessarily projecting, but just if he's on the field, that he can get more targets based off of just increased or better health.
I mean, he was 40th at tight ends in snaps last year. Like, it's pretty certain that he's not going to be that low again this year, especially with Hurst gone. Like, Nick Boyle is still going to play, but he's going to be higher than 40th at tight end at snaps.
Justin, I know we kind of mentioned, like, I mentioned personally that the middle rounds, I'm staying away from a lot of these tight ends just because where I'm gravitating to in drafts. But I'm curious to get your take on these guys because I know that some of these players especially are polarizing depending on who you talk to. But Evan Ingram, Waller, Tyler Higbee, Hunter Henry, and Austin Hooper, where do you stand on some of these guys? Are you higher or lower? Do you find yourself gravitating to them in drafts?
I'm not that excited about Henry and Hooper. I think I have them probably a little further down than most people. Waller's coming off the big year. The problem with him is last year you got such a nice price. Now you got to pay for it, and now he's got to deal with some new receivers there, even Jason Witten. For some reason, they brought in Jason Witten. I have no idea why. I've speculated like maybe they just wanted someone to come in who could be kind of a national, you know, nationally known face and could go to some of the events when they move to Vegas and that sort of thing. Because I don't know really what he's going to give them on the field, but he could siphon some targets, especially around the red zone. So we might not see Waller be as dominant as he was from a target total last year. I still think he's got a pretty good shot at the top 5, though, and I have him ranked there. Higbee is, you know, far from a lock, but out of this group, he's probably the one that I would take a chance on, and it really depends. I know there's been a lot of debate about him online, and the, you know, fantasy Twitter's been kind of going crazy, and I mean, I get it. It was such a small sample size, but he was so dominant during that time. I mean, maybe more so than any tight end that we've seen over a 5-game stretch, right? He had 400-yard games, the other one 84 yards and a touchdown. That is just unbelievable production for a tight end. He is not going to keep that up, but he was by far the number one scoring tight end during that time. On a per-game basis, he had 3 more fantasy points per game than the next best tight end during that stretch. And from a volume standpoint, I mean, Jared Goff, he's thrown back-to-back seasons now, over 4,600 yards with Sean McVay. He's going to have these, you know, nice empty or near empty stadiums. He's going to be able to hear everything Sean McVay has to say to him in his ear. So I think Goff's going to be decent this year. And with Gurley gone, maybe we see even more passing from this offense. And we have to note, right, all the Higbee stuff, it's been talked about. But for anybody that, you know, hasn't been, you know, just diving into all those fights on Twitter about Higbee, the big numbers came after they sort of switched to more 12 personnel down the stretch. And they kind of featured Robert Woods. They featured Higbee as the primary guys. And now you have Brandon Cooks leaving. You have Gerald Everett coming back, and, you know, he's going to be healthier. I know he played late in the season, but I don't think he was healthy because he didn't really get on the field that much. But if they continue to go with these 12 sets, and really their personnel kind of dictates that they should, with Brandon Cooks gone, I like Josh Reynolds. You know, even Van Jefferson, I don't know, you know, rookie receivers might have a little bit of a harder time getting up to speed this year, but I think their personnel really dictates that they should be playing more 12 personnel, and it would help the running game and all that sort of stuff, and the offensive line, everything. So with Cooks gone, I think Higbee's got a pretty good shot to still be featured in this offense. If you look at, you know, people who just want to say it was a flash in the pan, well, PFF graded him out as the third best tight end last year. He's behind George Kittle, he was behind Mark Andrews, and he was tied with Travis Kelce for the third best grade. So that's pretty good company to keep. And if I am going to take a chance at a guy in the middle rounds, he better have top five upside. And I know it was a small sample size, but we saw Higbee have that kind of upside. So I really like him still this year, but he's got to come at the right price. If that ADP keeps skyrocketing, then I probably won't end up taking him. Ingram, I'm torn on, because we know if he gets the volume, he's another guy who could be a top five player. But last year, you know, he was the tight end six when he was playing, and that was, I think he played 9 weeks before he got hurt last year. So he has that upside, but volume is really going to be the question for him. Golden Tate, Darius Slayton, Sterling Shepard, Saquon Barkley. There's a lot of options for Daniel Jones in that offense. You also have a new offensive coordinator there in Jason Garrett. Do we trust him to use any of his pieces properly to their full potential? I don't know. I probably don't really. So Ingram's kind of a tough one for me. He's got the upside, but I tend to pass on him because in that range, in the seventh round or so, the guy that has so many durability questions, I kind of like the wide receivers and the running backs that I get in that range more than somebody like Ingram when you factor in, you know, all those late round tight ends that we talked about earlier. And then, like I said, Henry, Hooper, it's kind of a volume thing for them. Henry, I'm just not as confident in the Chargers offense, really in the Chargers passing game. I don't think that the Tyrod Taylor is going to be able to keep all those guys producing consistently. The Chargers were the slowest offense in neutral situations last year, according to Football Outsiders. And they keep saying they want to play this grinded out style, lean on their defense, lean on the running game. My guess is that we're going to see Keenan Allen and Mike Williams and Henry and maybe even Austin Eckler be sort of less reliable week to week than they have been in, you know, in the past. So I'm not trying to hate on Henry. It's just, and it sucks because if he hadn't gotten hurt in the last couple of years, we'd already be talking about him as a guy that broke out. But now with Phillip Rivers not there, we know how much Rivers love leaning on the tight end. I just don't really see it for him. And then Hooper, he was just in such a perfect situation with the Falcons. You had Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley drawing the defense away. You had a bad defense in Atlanta. They were always in comeback mode. You know, they had the second most pass attempts on the year last season. I have them now projected for the most this year, so I think that's going to continue for them. And spoiler alert, I'm pretty high on Hayden Hurst, who's going to take over for Hooper in Atlanta. But going to the Browns system, Kevin Stefanski is going to bring over that Minnesota offense. When you're talking about, you know, the volume, the targets, last year they were 30th in pass attempts in Minnesota. So you bring that offense now to Cleveland, they have the personnel to do it, basically the perfect personnel. You have OBJ, Landry, Kupp, Kareem Hunt, you have David Njoku as well. You know, if they don't end up trading him, if you want to compare the Browns tight ends now to the Vikings ones, I mean, I think Hooper profiles more as the Kyle Rudolph, and Njoku's the more explosive option like Irv Smith. And even if they trade Njoku, they also drafted Harrison Bryant. So I'm just not that excited about the volume. I don't think he's going to see anywhere near the kind of target share that he saw with the Falcons. So those two guys, Henry and Hooper, I'm really not going after. And the other guys, it kind of just depends on if they fall or not.
I feel like you're drafting Darren Waller right now. He's going as a tight end five. You're drafting him at his ceiling. You mentioned all the weapons. I know if you go back and listen to our bust episode, obviously I'm not on him because that's the guy I was just all over talking about. There's no equity there for me because last year was almost like, if you were looking for previous years, the year that Evan Engram broke out in his rookie season, when basically everybody in the offense just went and just fell to the ground, that's what happened for Darren Waller last year. And you saw even when Hunter Renfrow was more on the field, his target share dropped. The touchdowns were not there. Didn't matter. It was just raw target volume. So I won't have any exposure to Darren Waller this year. As far as the rest of these middling tight ends, like, I just have a hard time with it because Evan Engram, if anybody stays, like, all those guys, even if you have a few different injuries, is he going to command a target share that's going to really vault him above, like, he's going as the tight end six right now? I don't see, like, this just path to him surpassing that point or reaching an upper echelon just based off of who all's in that offense, what that offense is probably going to look like, because I do think that they're going to be run heavy this year. And the same thing for Henry and Hooper. Like, Hooper, the big thing for me is that I feel like he, even when he's on the field, everybody's going to cannibalize into his targets. You talked about Minnesota, and yes, I don't have anything else to add on that because that's exactly how I see the position. Like, even if he captures just ridiculous, like, lucky touchdown equity, because we know that that's not sticky, but even if he were to garner, what, 8 touchdowns and stuff, like, he's going currently as the tight end 12, like, okay, he probably gets there, but we're talking about this. The yardage is really not going to be there unless, like we're talking about, they're just decimated by injuries. So you're really banking on him stacking touchdowns, and that's really just not a bet that I'm going to make. But Adam, any of these guys that stand out to you that you're like, okay, I got to have them on my team?
Not to the point where, like, I have to have them. Waller is probably somebody that I won't get to. Didn't score touchdowns last year in the perfect situation. Only had 3. And now you add, you know, Henry Ruggs. You add Edwards. You add Lynn Bowden. Like, you just... And, like, they used Foster Moreau a decent bit, especially in the red zone last year. He's going to come back from injury. Same with Hunter Renfrow, who over the last 6 games of the season averaged just under 7 targets per game. And because of the way this offense is set up, which is why I kind of like Hunter Renfrow late in drafts, Derek Carr does not force throws. 11.1% of his attempts last year were into tight windows, according to Next Gen Stats on NFL.com. Second lowest rate in the league. And Renfrow, you know, that slot guy who's, you know, not going to get pressed at the line, he was second among all receivers in average separation. Marcus Mariota, the backup quarterback, he doesn't force throws either. So, like, Renfrow is going to be a big part of this offense, which, and you talked about it, when Renfrow was healthy, we saw Waller's volume go down. So I'm just not really too interested in him. Ingram's the one that's a little bit interesting because, like Justin said, if he can stay healthy, I don't think I would be shocked if he was, like, the tight end 3, if he played a full season or close to it. He's that good. He's that good after the catch. I think the Giants' offense is going to be throwing a lot. But they also, at the moment, you know, Tate in the slot, Shepard out wide, Slayton, Barkley's going to catch 60 balls. So that's, you know, he doesn't have the upside in terms of volume as Kittle and Kelsey and probably Zach Ertz as well. I think the Tyler Higbee, Gerald Everett situation in Los Angeles is legitimately one of the most interesting in all of fantasy for this season because they are probably going to continue running a decent amount of 12 personnel. Gerald Everett was the first draft pick Sean McVay ever made. He likes Gerald Everett a lot. I don't think Everett's just going away. And Gerald Everett was kind of productive before Higbee broke out. He had a couple, you know, duds. But you look, week 4, 8 targets, 44 yards and a touchdown. Week 5, 11 targets for 136 yards. You know, 5 targets the next week, 10 targets, 50 yards and a touchdown in week 7. And then had 12 targets for 68 yards in week 10. And then he had a couple stinkers, then he got hurt, and then it was the Higbee show the rest of the way. But, like, I don't think he's going to be somebody you want to draft, but he could be someone that keeps, you know, he could be the difference between Tyler Higbee being, like, a top 7 tight end again or, like, tight end 12 or 13. So I think that's really interesting to see what Gerald Everett's role is going to be in 2020 because people forget, like, Sean McVay really, really likes this kid, and, you know, it's, what is he, 6'3", 240 pounds with a ton of athleticism. Like, he's not just going to be a guy that they have come in sparingly. He's going to play.
Well, and I think that's a great point to make. I don't think that Everett's a scrub at all. Like, I wrote him up in my late-round dynasty guys to remember as far as guys you need to target later in drafts, because I think he's got talent. He's going to be a free agent after this year. And you were talking about it, Adam. Like, I mean, in seven of the seven games that he saw 50% or more higher in snaps, he was a top six tight end in four of them. So really it's just a volume aspect. If he gets the volume, he produces. But one guy that we got to discuss very quickly, because we did not bring him up in any of the talk of these mid-round guys, and currently, depending on the day, he's been going anywhere from the back end of the seventh round to into the eighth round, and that's Rob Gronkowski. Like, opinions are divided. They're all over the place on whether we see past year's Gronk and he just smashing touchdowns in the end zone. Is he washed? Is he too slight now, considering you look at the pictures, he's definitely not Gronk of old. Justin, what version of Gronk do you think we see this year? Is he going to be healthy? Like, can he be productive? Where do you have him at right now?
Right now I have him inside my top 10, and I kind of thought that his ADP was going to be way higher. Thought that, you know, the name value, and maybe in casual drafts it will be, like maybe he will go even earlier, but at where he's going, and especially, I mean, I mentioned earlier, right, like I got him in Scott Fishbowl, and I had a pretty sharp division. Our draft was pretty tough to get value in, and then to see Gronk fall to tight end 16, to get him in that range, I was kind of surprised. And like I said, maybe that's because the guys in my draft were pretty sharp and, you know, they were going after those other names instead of Gronk. But I get it, because I'm not expecting the old Gronk. You know, what last time we saw him, his stats were way down. 2018, 47 catches, 682 yards, had three touchdowns, only played 13 regular season games. But then he came back for the playoffs and he still had it. I mean, 6 for 79 in the AFC Championship, 6 for 87 in the Super Bowl. Has he lost some explosiveness? Yeah, he definitely has. He's not super old. He's 31, but maybe a year off is actually going to help him. We don't know. That's possible, though. It's possible he was banged up, and now he's going to come back a little bit refreshed here. The real reason that I'm willing to take him, though, is the connection with Brady. And I kind of talked about it earlier. You know, when you're mentioning some of these tight ends who it doesn't take that much to get into the top 10 if you can put up a decent touchdown total. So the chemistry that he has with Brady, especially around the red zone, he's not going to have that chemistry yet with Chris Godwin, with Mike Evans. It'll come. And I know Brady's been getting the players together. They've been doing, you know, all these workouts with other coaches and stuff. He's really been trying to force that. But I kind of like Gronk this year because of that connection that he already has in such a strange COVID-reduced offseason. And I would liken him to somebody like Jared Cook, who had 9 touchdowns last year and finished as the tight end 7. His yardage wasn't huge, but he was able to get it done with the touchdowns. I think that's what we're going to see from Gronk this season, and I don't expect him to get back into the top 5. I don't expect him to put up, you know, if you're expecting greatness from him like we've seen in the past, it's not going to happen. But can he be a solid fantasy starter? Absolutely.
I think a lot of times as fantasy analysts, we try to, like, no matter what, like, if we get a question and we need to have a concrete answer. I've been asked about Gronk. I'm not going to lie to anybody. I have no clue what to expect from Rob Gronkowski this year. I don't know if he's going to be a full-time player. I'd be shocked if he was, like, a full-time player, especially if they, you know, continue to keep O.J. Howard and Cameron Brate. But you mentioned Jared Cook, and it's a great, great comparison. And I think last time we talked about this, Debra, I mentioned Darren Fells, who scored 7 touchdowns on 34 catches last year, and I think he was, like, the tight end 14. Like, would anybody be shocked? And Darren Fells, Gronk's going to be more involved in the Tampa Bay offense than Darren Fells was in Houston. I know Fells is, like, a heavily end-zone targeted guy, but why can't Gronk, especially with Tom Brady? Like, would anybody be shocked if Gronk had 7 touchdowns and, like, 45 catches? I wouldn't. And
nope.
That's all it really takes. I think he'd probably max out at 80 targets if Godwin and Evans stay healthy. But, again, with what Brady knows best, like, these guys know each other, like at some point, especially with the COVID stuff, like, that's just going to play a huge role. So, when we first got the news that Gronk was coming out of retirement and being traded to Tampa Bay, I was like, yeah, I think everybody's going to be too high on him, and I'll just let him climb his ADP, and I'll take other guys who fall. But like Justin said, it hasn't really happened yet. So I miss out on Hayden Hurst and some of these guys that I really like. I think I'd rather take Gronk where he's going than take a shot on like an Evan Ingram or Darren Waller, to be honest.
My only concern with Gronk would be that, are they going to treat him like late career Shaquille O'Neal, where he gets that big break before the playoffs? You know, they give him a month off or something to make sure he's nice and healthy, so they have him for that stretch. Like, that would be one thing, and especially when you're talking about, you know, a COVID year or something, is he just kind of coming back to be that spot starter, that guy that's there when they need him most, or is he actually going to come back and be a near full-time player? Because they might not need him to do that with O.J. Howard there and Cameron Brate there as well.
Well, and that's exactly where I'm at, Justin. Like, I'm more worried about what snap percentage we see out of Gronk. I think that we're more kind of banking on him stacking touchdowns and rapport and things of that nature. And for me, I could easily see, and it doesn't take much imagination, to where he's just a red zone guy. Like, when they get in close, they're going to lean on rapport. Now, could that make him, like, you know, the tight end 12 if he does get the touchdowns? It's just the fact that, like, I think that you're really looking for Gronk to be, I think he's going to be more inconsistent. And even if he has big spike weeks, you're looking at more maybe, what, like 4 for 40 and 2 touchdowns, as opposed to him really hitting any kind of yardage totals. And it's just, I would much rather, considering where he's even going in drafts, I would much rather just wait and punt the position, because there are a lot of guys that we're going to talk about pretty soon that I think could have similar expectations, or at least in their range of outcomes, and their draft cost is way lower. So, Justin, I know you mentioned Hayden Hurst really fast. I know, and I'm with you. I'm absolutely with you. I know you're higher possibly than consensus on Hayden Hurst. Besides Hayden Hurst, who else are you high on?
Well, a couple lower guys that I really like. Ebron, Chris Herndon, those would be two. I mean, for Ebron, well, here's the thing. We've got a whole backstory I got to tell here, because 2 years ago, maybe my best bold prediction ever was I said that Ebron was going to have double-digit touchdowns and be a top-5 fantasy tight end, and he comes through for me. I mean, he was playing with Andrew Luck in the Colts and comes through with that 14 total touchdown season, right? Last year, obviously, Luck retires. No offense to Jacoby Brissett, but the quarterback play wasn't there, and then Ebron deals with the injuries, falls off the fantasy map. I wasn't as high on him going into last season, in part because even when we thought Luck was going to be there, his price went way up, right? His ADP now, he wasn't going on the cheap. You had to pay up to get him, and I didn't really love that. This season now, it's like he's been completely forgotten. I don't know why, but all of a sudden now, he's going like outside of the top 20. But in Pittsburgh, you're going to get Ben Roethlisberger back. All signs are pointing to Roethlisberger being healthy. I mean, is it possible that he comes back and he's not the same player and, you know, he's getting up there? Yeah, you got to take a risk there. But even if that happens, even if Roethlisberger comes back and he's 70 or 80% of what he was, I mean, he's still going to be so much better than what we saw from that offense, and especially from their quarterback room last year, right? I don't think he's going to lead the league in passing attempts like he did in 2018, because now the Steelers defense is pretty damn good. So he's still going to get that offense moving, though. And I know we're all super excited about Deontay Johnson, I would assume, but the truth is that Juju's the only proven pass-catching weapon in Pittsburgh right now. And I think Deontay Johnson's going to break out, but we can't just bank on that. And in my projections, I've said this about a couple guys, but I'm not pegging Ebron for big yardage here. It's the same kind of thing. He's proven that he could put up a big touchdown total in an offense that kind of needs a guy around that red zone. So I think we could see him score 7, 8 touchdowns, maybe more. And he is just an unbelievable value, because he's going to go undrafted in like almost every league. It's like everyone thinks he's old or he's injured or something. The guy's only 27. He's been in the league for like 6 seasons, but he started so young that he's still in his prime right now. And then for Chris Herndon, this one's a little tougher, because I was kind of high on him, and I was kind of telling people last year, you know, stash him, because when he comes back from the suspension, you're going to get big things. And then, as we know, he comes back, he gets hurt, played in one game. I think he played like 18 snaps or something, and it was just this total bust year. But when you go back a year before to his rookie season, and normally we don't see rookies produce whatsoever at tight end in fantasy, but in that 2018 season, down the stretch, week 6 to week 16, he posted 50 yards and or a touchdown in 7 of those 10 games. And it's pretty rare to see this, but for a tight end, he was a top seven fantasy tight end as a rookie during that stretch, and it put him on pace. If you take those numbers, extrapolate them over a full 16-game season, would have had 53 catches, 715 yards, and 6 touchdowns, which those are pretty good numbers. And like I said, we're talking about when he was a rookie. So now he's entering year 3. He is also basically free in drafts. You can get him in like the 14th round, also probably undrafted a lot of places. And Adam Gase, as much as everybody wants to just crush him, he has talked up Chris Herndon a lot. He did it before last season. And then this offseason, you got Connor Hughes of The Athletic saying that the Jets just can't wait to unleash Herndon. And his replacement last year, Ryan Griffin, he had 13 starts, but he was a near full-time player. He played on over 80% of the snaps. So we know that this offense is willing to rock that full-time starter, right? So you have some upgrades to this offense as well. For as much as everybody's down on the Jets, the offensive line gets some upgrades. You hope Sam Darnold's going to be healthy this year. They kind of got derailed by him having mono early in the season and missing some time last year. And people forget, but in the second half last season with Darnold healthy, the Jets were 6-2. I'm not suggesting they're a playoff team or anything like that, but they might be a little bit better than people give them credit for. So if I'm waiting on tight end, Herndon, Ebron, those are breakout guys. They could totally do it. I mean, Ebron's broken out before, obviously, but those are guys that could really jump up, and people are really sleeping on them right now.
Ryan Griffin, by the way, before he got hurt at the end of last year, was legitimately fantasy relevant too. People forget that. Like, Ryan Griffin was a thing.
It's true.
So, yeah, I know D-Bro doesn't really love Herndon. I'm definitely more on board with Herndon than you, just because he's going so late. And, like, the Jets don't really have a huge competition for targets. I mean, that's one of the reasons why Griffin was so relevant. It was Jameson Crowder, then, you know, obviously they had Denzel Mims and Breshad Perriman, but, like, you know, those guys aren't going to be guys that you bring in, they're going to, you know, garner 6-7 targets a game. So, yeah, I'm kind of in on Herndon. In his rookie year from week 6 on, he was a top 10 tight end in fantasy and showed a lot of efficiency, big play potential, top 10 in yards per target, yards per reception, and fantasy points per pass route. So I like it. Is he my favorite of the late round guys? No, I think I'd rather go Jonnu Smith, who I think Jonnu Smith, and we'll wait for it towards the end, but I think he could really surprise some people. But yeah, I know D-Bro's not buying the Chris Herndon.
No, and I don't want to poo-poo Justin's take too much here, but
it's all right. It's nice for us to actually disagree for once. I feel like we're always on the same page.
and that's maybe poo-poo why I'm so awkward about it. I mean, like, two words, Adam Gase. I know I get salty and I have all the vinegar in my veins about Adam Gase, but it's true. It's so true. Chris Herndon had that you're talking about. He had the explosion. He played really well. And then what happened? I know he missed all of last year, but Adam Gase is here now, baby. Like, he's not going to make it or let it happen. You look over Gase's career, and really, this is even post, like, Peyton Manning. So I'm not going to allow any Peyton Manning tight end usage to, because that's not Adam Gase. We have seen enough of Adam Gase after Manning to know that anything that happened in that era was not because of Adam Gase. It was because of Peyton Manning. And if you look at in the 3 of the 5 seasons Gase was is away from Manning, none of his tight ends have seen above an 8% target share. The only year you saw one tight end get above 10% was Martellus Bennett with the Bears. And really, on that 2015 squad, everybody just went, they died. Like, they got injured, they were hurt. It was just Bennett was the only guy there to catch passes. So I really think it comes down to offensive design, and I just don't see where the targets are going to come from. And Griffin, yeah, he had some good weeks for DFS, but it wasn't based off of a lot of targets. It was touchdowns in many aspects. And I just don't – if I'm going to go take one of those late-round shots on a guy, I can't push the button just because it's Adam Gase, and I don't think the usage is going to be there despite Chris Herndon's talent, because he is – uber talented. If it was just based off of talent profiles, yes, I'm all the way in. But when you have a coach that is a giant buffoon like Adam Gase, I mean, we've literally seen enough aspects and times where, like, productive, talented players are just canned by Adam Gase that I'm just, the Jets are basically a full fade for me. Like, outside of maybe a little bit of exposure to Jameson Crowder, only because Adam Gase will rise and die by the slot receiver, that's about it. Who are other guys besides Chris Herndon for me that you find yourself lower on? Adam?
I like the player. I like the offense, but I'm just expecting some full-on regression. So Jared Cook, really nice year last year. The touchdowns, I think he scored 9. They were great. He was really, really good down the stretch. I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that, for starters, Alvin Kamara was banged up. Once he got healthier, he started scoring touchdowns again. B, the Saints, for I don't know how many years now, whether it's been Colston or Michael Thomas as their one, and obviously Jimmy Graham too, but they have not had a number two wide receiver in forever, and that could change this year if Emmanuel Sanders is, you know, he's going to be more consistent, in my opinion, than Tre'Quan Smith and Ted Ginn and those guys ever have been. So I think that's going to be enough to where Jared Cook, if I'm expecting Alvin Kamara and Latavius Murray in the running game, because remember, this is a team that has scored as many running back touchdowns pretty much as anyone since Drew Brees has been their quarterback. If I'm expecting those guys to get back among the league leaders in touchdowns with their running backs, then somebody's got to take a hit, and I think it's going to be Jared Cook. So probably not somebody that I'm going to draft very often, if at all, just because he's still not... You know, he's not expensive necessarily, but he's not exactly a value. He's tied with Mark Andrews for the end zone target leader among tight ends. I expect that to come down, and therefore Jared Cook not really on my radar.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And one of the reasons to target him last year was because he was kind of set up to be that second passing game option. And now you can't be sure of that. And that goes back to even what we were just saying about guys like Ebron and Herndon, you know, the possibility of being that second or even first passing game option. Because there's not that many tight ends out there. There's a reason why, you know, Travis Kelce and George Kittle, they're right up there as, you know, the one or the, you know, the 1A, 1B kind of thing in their offenses. And not many tight ends are.
And to piggyback off what Justin was saying earlier, I won't draft Austin Hooper either. I will draft his replacement in Atlanta every time over him.
And so that leads perfectly into this. So last year, Hooper was a great value. Like, he was one of the guys you could get in the later mid rounds, possibly at the end of your draft. And we saw him explode last year. Who is that guy or guys? Because I know we haven't talked about all these late round guys we keep kind of mentioning or skirting around. What are all the guys that you could see having massive ceilings? Like, if everything works out, like all the stars align, could be this year's Darren Waller, Mark Andrews. Is it late round guys, middle round guys like Hayden Hurst? Give me your whole list. I want you to open the book up, and who are the guys that you're just absolutely in love because of the ceiling that you're going to chase this year?
Man, if I just got to run. I mean, I don't even know. I didn't know if you were going to let me count Hayden Hurst for this one just because his ADP has been on the rise so much that he's kind of getting like the backlash now where
it's worth
people
it.
Are starting to think that he's overrated.
I mean, he's going as tight end 8, so I still think that he qualifies. He's in the 7th or 8th round right now, so
I still think he could be a top 5 tight end this year, maybe even higher, just because of the situation, and we've kind of already gone over it, right? But that situation in Atlanta, it's going to be great again for the tight end. And I know that we love Julio, we love Calvin Ridley, but I'm projecting them to lead the league in passing attempts. So there's going to be a lot of volume to go around there. And I don't think that Austin Hooper is that good of a player. I don't think he's a guy that can create for himself.
Yep.
I think Hurst might be. I mean, people forget that he was a first round pick. He's a more athletic guy. He could do more after the catch.
He's a better football player than Hooper. I'll say it. I've said it before.
What's happened for him was, as a rookie, he got banged up during that offseason, that first offseason, and then broke his foot in the preseason. So now all of a sudden he was behind the learning curve there. And then Mark Andrews just Wally pipped him, right? He was also very good, and he took that starting job, and then Hayden Hurst really didn't get it back. So now you put him on this Atlanta team where he's going to get this volume, right? When you talk about all the targets that Hooper was receiving last year, I mean, he was one of 11 tight ends who saw 80-plus targets last season. And I mentioned before, I think, you know, he finished with 97 despite the fact that he missed 3 games. And he used that workload to produce the 3rd most fantasy points at the position. even if Hurst only gets like 75% of that, it would still put him in the top 12 in tight end targets. Then you have other things, right? Dirk Cotter, the offense coordinator there, always has made tight ends a priority. You have the fact that Hayden Hurst, you know, as much as he wasn't getting a ton of volume in Baltimore, he still graded out as the 12th best tight end in 2019 for PFF. Hooper was like 8, so not that much of a difference there. And if I don't grab Kittle or Kelsey early, and Adam, it seems like you're with me, like Hurst is probably the guy that I'm going to end up with unless his ADP just skyrockets and goes off the board. Now, D-Bro, I know you said go through like all the names, and I haven't actually done that, but I'll look at my list right now and go through it. I mean, I have Hayden Hurst at tight end 9. I think he's got a good shot there. I have Mike Gesicki at tight end 13.
Oh, boy.
He could be one of those guys, especially if Preston Williams isn't healthy at the start of the year and he's coming back. There's no guarantees, even if he's on the field, that he's going to be 100% early in the season. So that's a situation where Gesicki's, he's a big slot anyway. He could put up big numbers there. He really could. TJ Hawkinson, there was some concern in like June when I think Daryl Bevel came out and said that, you know, he wasn't healthy yet. And then in July, we see him training with George Kittle, making cuts, looking pretty good. And he's a player that he came out and had that monster debut last season. Now, it was against the Cardinals, and later we figured out that the Cardinals were like the worst defense against tight ends ever. But
the Cardinals couldn't defend Ross Dwelly. I'll never forget that. Everybody was like, wait, Kittle's not playing? So Ross Dwelly might be a thing. And I think he scored 2 touchdowns.
He did. That was a great week in DFS. I remember
that week. Well, Hawkinson just, you know, he blew up in that first week. And then injuries, you know, and then Stafford got hurt. The whole season kind of went to hell after that. But there's a reason why we viewed him as one of the best tight end prospects, you know, that I can remember coming out. Like, he is just a phenomenal talent, a guy who's going to be around for a long time. And now is the buy low time. You are not going to get it after this season. So, you know, Dallas Goedert, it would probably take a Zach Ertz injury. But if that happens, I mean, you mentioned Jonnu Smith earlier. Blake Jarwin could do it with touchdowns. Eric Ebron, Chris Herndon, Irv Smith. It's in a draft class where, you know, everybody was looking at Hawkinson and Noah Fant, and they've kind of forgotten that Irv Smith, you know, went in the second round. He's this explosive player. You have Stephon Diggs leaving Minnesota. There's some vacated targets, I think like 94 there. He's going to be a guy that has an opportunity to really produce, and they're talking him up. The coaching staff is a bit. So there's just so many guys at tight end this year.
Yeah, and really, you kind of touched on a lot of the guys that I love. Mike Gesicki is a guy that if it depends on the day, or it depends on what time of night, like how many drinks are you're in, but I have a hard time not at least considering him for close to top 5 status. I love Mike Gesicki. Like, I think that you absolutely nailed it. He ran for almost 70% out of the slot last year. I think that's again how he's used this season. And Chan Gailey has featured 2 main veins in his passing games. It's really come down to an outside threat, which I think is Devontae Parker. He's established himself as the alpha there. And I think it's going to be Gesicki out of the slot. Quincy Enunwa was only a thing when Chan Gailey was there. After that, we never heard from Quincy Enunwa. And I understand that injuries are part of that. But still, that was when he had that blow-up spot where we actually saw him have usefulness in fantasy. So I think Gesicki is in a prime spot. You touched on Irv Smith, and I love Irv Smith. Like, I think that he is this year's Dallas Goedert. I think that he's the guy that can vault himself into the top 12. If anything happens to Kyle Rudolph, he has top 5 upside. And a lot of this comes down to the role that the tight ends play for the Vikings. Like, we're talking about rapport. We're talking about, like, the differences in this offseason. Justin Jefferson, I think, does factor into this passing game, but I do think there are some questions there. There is an automatic rapport there with Cousins. And if we look at last year down the stretch, Irv Smith, at least on the back half of the year, so like weeks 9 through 16, because Rudolph sat out week 17 getting ready for the playoffs, you saw Irv Smith, he ran more pass routes than Kyle Rudolph, 163 to 147. And his usage is really what needs to be made note of here, is that he ran out of the slot 63% of the time. So if you marry that with the fact that just the tight end position for the Vikings, they garnered 33% of the targets inside the 5-yard line. Irv Smith has 1, a path to volume, and 2, a path to immense, immense touchdown equity, because I think that the Vikings pass defense could really struggle this year. Like, they weren't great last year, but Rhodes is gone. You have, they lost their best slot, their best corner that was on the field last year, and Mackenzie Alexander is gone. They're going to be starting two rookies on the outside. I think that this defense could seriously struggle. And I think, at least if you're looking at like one of the guys that has both ceiling and could have some really big early season viability, if that defense gets off to a rough start, I think Irv Smith is the guy. And if we're going to go super deep, there's no way that I can't mention Josh Oliver this year. Like, I love him as a guy that if you're looking for that Darren Waller-esque guy, the guy that is uber athletic, he's on not a great team, but a team that could be throwing a lot. And we do have a history of tight end usage with Jay Gruden now there for the Jags. I think that Josh Oliver is the guy that I really want to gravitate to and pick up as the last pick of a lot of drafts, as the end of best ball drafts. Everybody throws at Tyler Eifert there, and I'm not worried about Eifert. I think Eifert is better for Gardner Minshew than he is for, as opposed to being a threat to Josh Oliver. If we want to look at usage, if you go back to Jay Gruden, all the way back to his time with the Bengals, there was a ton of tight end usage in that offense. I mean, you saw a guy like Jermaine Gresham garner 92 targets, 94 targets. The year that they got Eifert and they had Gresham, that position had 128 targets. Now, some of that comes down to who were the other players on that depth chart and how did the targets get divvied up. But even last year, in a super small sample size, because I don't think that people realize this, that Josh Oliver got the usage when he was on the field. He didn't get the targets. If you look at the box scores, he had like one targets, two targets in the three games that he played. But really, if you dive deep, in two of the three games that he saw action, and really he missed a lot of training camp, in two of those three games, he ran 20 or more routes. So the usage is there, and Eifert was a bit player last year. Like, that guy didn't even – he only had four games where he played 55% or more of the snaps or ran 20 or more routes. So I think that he is going to be there for the red zone. I think if you're looking for the guy that could just blow up, it's going to be Josh Oliver, and nobody sees it coming right now.
I keep moving Irv Smith up my rankings because of you, so thank you. It just makes so much sense, though. I mean, you mentioned, what was it, weeks 10 to 16? Adam Thielen missed a lot of those games, and that might be why they had him run more routes, Irv Smith. Now, okay, Thielen's back, but now they have to replace Stephon Diggs. I know Justin Jefferson's there, but I could honestly see a situation where, because Kyle Rudolph has been among the most, most snaps run blocking among tight ends for a while now. I think he was like fourth last year. I could see a situation where that's a full season of Rudolph's going to be more of the run blocking guy at this stage of his career, and Irv Smith's going to be the guy that runs routes. So I'm definitely warming up to Irv Smith. Gesicki, you know, can we not put him at tight end because he's a receiver? He had like a 58%. His catch rate was terrible last year. That hopefully gets better, whether Tua plays or not, we'll see. I selfishly can't be excited about TJ Hockenson, because if he has a big year, that means Marvin Jones probably got hurt, and I just can't accept that. He's been, what, maybe the most complete tight end prospect we've seen in a long time? I'll throw one other guy out there, Jonnu Smith, I've talked about this podcast, I like. Jay Sternberger, I mean, there's so much opportunity there. I'm not exactly confident about it, but would anybody be shocked if he was second or third on this team interceptions?
I got a super deep one too. I mean, I didn't know we were going as deep as Josh Oliver, but I got one as well. It's Dan Arnold on the Cardinals.
Yes!
Formerly of the Saints. And I didn't think that we'd be talking about him at all, because I assumed that they were going to go get somebody either in free agency, in the draft, and then they didn't. And sometimes, like, when teams make moves, it tells you more than their words do, right? And that tells you very definitively they think they're okay at that position. And then we wonder, okay, why is that, right? And when you look back, like, they got him late in the year on waivers, and then he ended the season with just this monster game. He had four catches, 76 yards, and a touchdown. And that was after the tight ends really didn't do that much in that offense last year, but they had a very old Charles Clay. They have Max Williams that's not really a pass-catching threat. And then this offseason, we haven't gotten the normal offseason practices and everything to kind of, you know, get some of those drum beats going. But some things have trickled out. I mean, one of the beat writers from The Athletic talked about how impressed the team was with Arnold and said, he's got a chance to make a real impact this year. And then you had Peter Schrager of Good Morning Football. He had a quote where he kind of cited some sources with the Cardinals and said that they're like super high on him. And he even pointed out, he said, fantasy owners need to take notice of this one. And that's a weird one to say, right? That is so deep to go off on that one. So you're talking about a 6 foot six guy. I don't think he's going to get a huge target total, because I think they're going to spread the ball around a lot in that offense, but maybe he's a red zone weapon there. Maybe we see him, you know, do a little bit more, at least be a potential bye week fill-in maybe for teams.
I love the air yards Arnold call. I love it. I love it, love it, love it, because it's a great offense. It's so sneaky, and he's got the talent. I mean, he's basically what a pseudo version of Mike Gesicki. Like, he's going to run from the slot. We've seen him flash. I mean, I've played him in DFS a number of times in showdown lineups just because he does have that upside. Justin, I can't thank you enough by stopping by the pod today just to slice up tight ends with us. Give us an idea of what you're working on at the Score. Plug some things. What are you busy with right now?
Well, we got the Score Fantasy Football Draft Kit. It went up in May, but we update it daily all the way until the season. Got lots of stuff coming up. My projections are coming out, offensive line rankings, you know, strategy articles, just a ton of stuff. We make it, it's just set up for mobile, so you can have your phone in your hand. You can be just scrolling through it as fast as you can, and it's totally free. And as of last year, and I'm happy that I can finally say that, you know, my rankings right now are the most accurate in the industry. So I get to, you know, we're giving those out for free. It's a great thing that the Score is doing. So yeah, they can find that, the Score Fantasy Football Podcast. We got one episode coming out a week right now. That's going to ramp up as the year gets closer. And people can find me on Twitter at Justin Boone. And guys, I said it off the top, but man, I appreciate you thinking of me as one of your first guests. Love being on here. Love talking about tight end in a year when I think we got the point across that this is the deepest tight end
If we're bringing up Dan Arnold, then.
Well, and not all these guys are going to hit, but just the fact that there's so many guys that have a chance to hit. It's a really, really interesting year, and it's going to be an interesting season overall, so I'm getting really excited.
Well, I want to thank Justin again for stopping by. This was a fantastic episode. As always, Adam and I are going to be back next week, rocking three episodes a week. We have a fantastic lineup that we're going to sit here and put out on Twitter, and we're going to be back, man. We're out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.